This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 92-year-old Bob Izumi of Barstow, California. In different parts of his six decades connected to the armed forces, he's been part of the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, the 101st Airborne. He served in the U.S. Air Force later and concluded his career at a Marine Corps post. We'll get into that, but when we left off, Bob had left that go-for-broke unit, the 442nd, with so many others who, like him, had come out of the Japanese internment camps. And Bob, you volunteered to be a paratrooper.
What were your duties with the 506th Parachute Infantry Regiment?
Oh, just an infantryman. And from Bastogne, Captain Cannon said I'm going to be a lead man. I was a lead man going up toward Haguenau, the last concentration camp we liberated. And then from there, I don't know who took the pictures of me. I was a lead man going up to Butcher's Garden.
That's Hitler's hideout there.
And Captain Cannon says, you better wear that hat, steel hat. I said, sir, I didn't get hit real bad. I might as well not get hit now. So I didn't wear my hat. Somebody took a picture of it, and it's in the book. I'll show it to you later.
You kind of glossed over Bastogne there. You said after Bastogne, but that was a big deal. A lot of guys lost their lives there.
Most of them were froze to death.
Right.
Jim Martin would show us how to make a foxhole. And we would cut branches, great big branches from the forest there,
yeah,
and lay them down. And then we would put leaves on top. And then the water would go underneath it. But most guys didn't do that. Most guys would just dig a hole in the morning and they would froze to death.
I know you lived through it, but a lot of people listening right now, you know, they weren't alive for any of this. They don't know where Bastogne is. You know it's in Belgium. You know how cold it was.
Yes.
But explain for our listeners how it was that you guys ended up there and what happened once you got there.
Well, we were in Reims, France, got the news where we were going to be trucked into Bastogne. The Red Ball Express, which was all black unit, they were the drivers. They got caught behind the lines after we took us in there. Anyway, we went in there with the Red Ball Express. And then there was a American Indian unit, was the Code Talkers, but we don't say thank you for the Code Talkers there. Think about it. They only have a little monument. But if you go to Bastogne, it's all about E Company with a band of brothers.
You do hear more about them than anyone else.
Right. You're so right. Why? Why? General Patton was there with all the tanks. 82nd Airborne was there.
Mm-hmm. And you were there. And what were the conditions you were dealing with? How challenging was this just to survive from day to day?
It was just cold. There was a railroad track, and across the railroad track was the farm. Aubrey Jackson and I, we would zigzag into that, break into the farmhouse, and we would get warm sheets and things, take them back, because we weren't ready for a cold climate. They just trucked us in there, and that was it.
And it was the coldest winter that anyone
yes.
there had ever seen.
And about 4 feet of snow.
It's something you're not used to from Southern California, I'm sure.
Well, like I said, Pee Wee Martin showed us how to survive it. And the guys, some of the guys, oh, three-quarters of them wouldn't pay attention to him. I can see him plain as day now. He was out in the field with a mortar, and you can see the shells from the Germans trying to get him, but he would lob these mortars, and he didn't even get a Bronze Star or things like that.
Well, and I'm sure the enemy gunfire, artillery, mortars, whatever, they probably weren't very far from you either.
Oh, no, maybe from here to the next corner.
Do you remember some moments that, looking back on now, you say, hey, that was a pretty close call? I was fortunate to get through that?
No, I never thought about that.
I'm sure you dealt with friends of yours getting killed.
Oh, yes. Well, Andy Matuzovich, he was, I think about him in Vietnam the same way, or Korea. It was worse in Vietnam than World War II.
Well, and I want to hear about that and hear why you feel that way. But as far as what was going on in Bastogne, it was bad. A lot of people did die. A lot of people were wounded. But it could have been a lot worse.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
When did you guys have a sense of what was going on? And was there a time where you thought, hey, we're trapped here and we're never getting out?
No, I didn't think about that. Christmas Eve, we sang Silent Night. Everybody stopped firing, and the Germans stopped firing. And we heard the Germans singing Silent Night also. And after midnight, hell broke loose.
So to hear the Germans singing Silent Night, you have to be pretty close to where they are.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
How far apart were you?
Maybe about 100 yards.
So the Germans are 100 yards away. Snow everywhere. You guys have been fighting each other all this time.
Right.
And it's Christmas Eve, and you hear them singing.
And we sing. But right after midnight, hell broke loose,
And what kinds of things are you doing during this time? Are you just trying to stay where you are and fight people off? Are you patrols? What's going on?
I had the M1 in my foxhole, and I just dug in a little higher. I mean, a little slower. And then when the 88 comes in, you can hear the 88. It'll go, whoosh, 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 whoosh. And if it hits close to you, we jump in there because the shell is warm.
So you let the 88 come in, and then you run and jump in that hole, and it's warm. How often do you think you did that?
I did it twice.
That means the shells are coming pretty close to you.
Oh, real close.
But it's not going to land in the same place twice.
No, sir.
Right?
No.
I know you've talked about this a lot over the years, so it may seem like no big deal. But most of us have never lived through experiences like this, and you're still just a very young man. Were you scared? Did you think that maybe you wouldn't be coming home?
No, I didn't thought about it, even through Korea and Vietnam.
Never scared?
No, I never. I was scared, but I never thought about death.
Wow. Maybe that's why you made it through all of that. Maybe that has something to do with it. What was the hardest thing for you to deal with over there in World War II?
Losing my friends. Yeah. I wish they were here, but here there's only Zelensky, Pee Wee Martin, and I. That's the only three I know of. I'm not the original. Zelensky and Pee Wee Martin were originals. They went all the way through D-Day, Holland, and all the way through.
Give us a sense of what you guys did in the 101st after Bastogne. And how much did you guys have left, body-wise, strength-wise, after Bastogne?
Oh, the company was still there, but I didn't linger too much with the other companies. So our companies stuck together all the way into the Rhine River. Then from Rhine River, we went into Hagenau, liberated the last concentration camp there. Then from Hagenau, marched up to Berchtesgaden, then Berchtesgaden down into Salem Sea and Utendorf.
You mentioned the concentration camp, liberating that.
Yes.
You were there?
Yes, sir.
What'd you see?
I was walking in. Captain Kahn was to my right, and there was a, I hate to say that, but he was there. And then we were going to cover him up because he was dead. Then another man came in, a real skinny fellow, and he came in. He opened the man's mouth, pulled out his teeth, and put in his teeth, and walked away.
Another inmate.
He knew what the gold teeth meant, I guess. So he just took it. And,
wow.
Yeah.
I know it's not easy to talk about and not pleasant. Could you believe the kind of condition that those prisoners were in?
Oh, they were awful. I can't explain it until when I was in concentrate, in the camp.
At Manzanar.
Manzanar. It was almost like that. You just had the bed and you had to make it really nice and with straws and whatever.
As far as the accommodations, it reminded you of Manzanar.
Yes.
But the conditions of the people there
were worse.
I would think quite a bit worse.
It was.
And you probably didn't only see survivors. You probably saw the people who died there, too. Right?
Oh, yes. I didn't see that. The only survivor I saw, I didn't pay attention to that man that came. And then Captain Kahn says, let's go. And that's when they say Easy Company was there first, but our company was there first. Our company was in Hitler's hideout first. I got pictures of that.
And did you know that at the time? Did you know what you guys were going into there?
No.
Tell me about that.
We went in and they blew out the windows. The window was, I guess, about 18 inches thick, but they blew it out.
So while you were there at Hitler's Eagle's Nest, did you guys become aware of its significance and what it was and who had been there?
Oh, no, I didn't think nothing about it. I got a picture of me sitting, my foot on top of the great big window that was blown out.
Uh-huh.
I left there, and the captain says, we don't have no rations or anything. So went down to Utendorf. Bob Parks, he's gone now. Anyway, Bob Parks and I said, let's go up and find a deer or something, meat for the company. So we walked up there, and I saw a cow. And I said, I'll shoot the cow, but I don't know how to skin it. He said, I know how to skin it. So I shot the cow, and we pulled it back down, and he skinned it, and the whole company had fresh meat, and we ate pretty good. So 60-something years later, again, we had a reunion in Xenia, Ohio. Captain Kahn says, before I go from this earth, I want to find out who shot that cow. And we all say, why? He said, because the Bürgermeister, which is the mayor,
uh-huh.
I had to pay the Bürgermeister for the cow. And Bob Park says, Bobby Zumi killed him.
Three under the bus, huh?
Yeah. So then I said, well, I killed it, sir, but he skinned it. Then Captain Kahn said, okay, I'm satisfied.
You know, that brings something up. You talk about having no rations there at that point later on in the war. But what about at Bastogne?
You didn't have hardly any rations.
I mean, how bad did it get?
Bad when we had to go across the way and where they had the farm there. The guys would steal eggs, things like that. But two guys were killed when they went back into town. The railroad track went like this. We were over here. 502nd was here, and the 506 was here. So these two guys are coming through the railroad tracks, and the 50 Deuce guy says, "Halt, who goes there?" That's the way I understand. "What's the call sign?" And they were so drunk, they just laughed it off. So the 502nd, we don't blame him, but he opened fire and killed both of them.
Just because I didn't know the call sign.
But these two guys went all the way through D-Day and Holland.
Tragic.
Yes, sir. Things like that. It's another guy was from Iowa. He said, "Bob, I can't walk anymore." So I took my knife and I cut it open. And as I took his shoes off, the whole just blossomed out like a balloon. So we got a jeep and medic took him in a town. And 60-something later, I saw him again. He says, "Bob, thanks a lot for what you did." He would smile.
For cutting his shoes off.
Yeah.
And getting him medical attention.
Yeah.
And you never got wounded?
No.
Beating some odds?
No.
With the places you were?
Well, even in Korea or Vietnam, I didn't think about it until I was ready to go home. Then I thought, "Oh boy, I'm free, I'm going home." My son and I was in Vietnam together.
Yeah, not many people can say that, and we'll get to that, but what about the end of World War II?
We were packing to go to Japan. He says, "PFC Izumi," he says, "we're not taking you." I said, "Why?" He says, "Because you're a Japanese-American, you did too much here." I said, "My brother is over there." "Oh," he says, "no, they're not." I said, "There's quite a few MIS in that area."
Yeah.
And he didn't understand that. He says, "Well, I'll transfer you," that's where, "to the 82nd Airborne." And then the Japanese signed the peace treaty, and then I went to the 82nd anyway.
The war ends. You come back home.
From Fort Ord, I took a bus down to West Los Angeles. We stopped in Mojave. He says, "This is lunch break." So I got out. We all got out, and I went inside. The proprietor says, "We don't want any Japs in this cafe." I said, "Sir, I just got through coming and fighting in Europe." He said, "I don't give a darn if you what you did." So he kicked me out. And the bus driver says, "What's happened now?" So I told him, I said, don't get mad. So anyway, he went in there and says, "My bus is from Greyhound. I'm going to tell him that we will not stop here anymore."
Wow.
And he did that. And the second incident was when I got out, I went work for Chrysler Limited in Beverly Hills. Well, a lady came in and says, if that Jap is here tomorrow, I'll tell all your customers not to come in here." She was a well-to-do. So I told Mr. Messenger, I said, "I don't want no trouble." And the next day, I went to Long Beach recruiting station there, raised my hand and went back into service. Went into the Army Air Force. I went to Scott Air Force Base. Sergeant Hatfield, I remember him. "If it wasn't for your relatives or your people, my dad would be alive." I said, "That's nothing to do with me. I didn't do it." So I said, "Don't make a difference. I'm going to wash you out because you're a dirty old Jap." And I tried it. And anyway, I learned code. One I really remember was, "Daw-daw did it. That's number 7. Scott Field chicken." That's how I remember it. And everything I started remembering it. And he worked so hard to wash me out. And at the end, I graduated. I said, "Sergeant Hatfield," I said, "I'm sorry, but I made it."
Well, and I'm just imagining what it's like to be in your shoes. Here you go through the war in Europe, some of the most dangerous places of the war in Europe. You're risking your life for the country that has been holding your family hostage. You don't deal with discrimination in the army, in the war. You come back home.
And I get it.
You get it. And that's what causes you to go back to the service. You say,
yes,
"Hey, if they don't want me working at the car place, I'll go back in the military." And then you run into it there too.
Right.
That had to be really disappointing and disheartening.
Well, it wasn't after graduating out of that school in Scott Field. I went to Edwards Air Force Base, Army Air Base, working in the control tower. That's how I learned to be a control tower operator at Nellis. I went to March Air Force Base, and that's where I met Janet Leigh.
Wow, the actress.
And John Wayne and Howard Hughes. Howard Hughes picked me and two guys to become his personal control tower operator. At the end of the pictures, and he left his C-121. It's a Constellation.
Yeah.
He left it at the dry base where he left his aircraft there. and left it there for a year. He forgot it anyway. After the made the picture, he gave me a Texas Fifth. You know what that is?
It's a lot of alcohol?
I still have it.
Still have it?
Yeah.
Given to you by Howard Hughes.
Yeah. It's whiskey. It's full of whiskey. Uh-huh. I still have it.
What was the picture they were filming?
Oh, Jet Pilot.
Jet Pilot.
Uh-huh.
John Wayne and Janet Leigh.
Yes, sir.
And you were the guy he chose.
In the control tower.
Uh-huh. It's break time again, but we'll hear about another Hollywood star Bob came into contact with, not in school like Marilyn Monroe, not because they were making a film like John Wayne and Janet Leigh, but this time because this gentleman actually flew missions from Bob's base in Vietnam. We'll also hear about the time Mr. Izumi defied an order. He was both punished and celebrated for that. The Air Force gave him a Bronze Star, the Vietnam government its Medal of Honor. Find photos and videos of this unique veteran at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.